Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. We're going to take one final look at USC's loss in South Bend to Notre Dame. Look forward to homecoming with Arizona. Answer a lot of your questions. And when I mean a lot, there are a lot of questions you guys called in. Record numbers, emails, texts, it's all over it. So we're going to do our best to get through all of them and talk about all the things that you guys are interested in. Who's going to do that? I'm your host, Ryan Abraham. Like we said, but I got Keely Yore in studio. Does a great job for reporting on the Trojans for us here at USCFootball.com. Hello, Keely.
Hello, hello.
What's going on?
Nothing much. Glad to be back in the studio.
Nice. Very talkative today, Keely is. All right. We just want to get into it. We got
Dan. Of course.
We got Dan Weber on the line also. Been reporting with on covering the Trojans since the early 2000s. What's up, Dan?
Hey, another week, another go round. Let's see what happens this week. 3-3. Who knows which way they go? They probably got to win 6 or 7 in a row to survive intact. I think going forward, but we'll see. Obviously, with the game we just saw, they play that game and get a little better. They probably couldn't. They could easily win all those games. But if you think they're going to do that, I don't know. You know, yeah. You probably picked them to go 10-2, and you know,
your prediction is now done, Dan. We know officially they will not go 10-2.
True.
Yeah, and I just don't want to give in and say, well, they're good enough to do that. Now I look back and say, heck, I picked them to lose to Washington. They shouldn't have lost to Washington. Come on.
Yeah.
And then you can come out of there and say, you know, Notre Dame played like Notre Dame's supposed to play. They were happy with how they played. They're tough. They're physical. They're well coached. They were at home. They had a fired up crowd pushing them on. They had Pac-12 officials. Hell, what can you ask more than that? And USC probably wins again. If USC plays as close to its potential as Notre Dame did to its, USC walks out of there a winner. That's what is getting to be frustrating. They could, you know, the whole coulda, shoulda, woulda. But, Notre Dame does what Notre Dame does. USC sometimes does what USC does, and then they do the other part of what USC does, and that's why they are 0-3 on the road this year.
Was listening to our friends over at the Reign of Troy podcast, and they had some interesting stuff. They get into like the Bill Connolly like SP plus numbers. I don't get right. into all that stuff and stuff, but it was interesting. And I think so. The point that they were making, and I think it was coming from Bill Connolly, is that the first 20 minutes of the game, USC dominated and was up 3-0. And then the next 10 minutes, Notre Dame dominated and scored 17 points and then three more. So when USC had the upper hand, they just weren't able to capitalize. And when Notre Dame did, they maximized their opportunities. I'm like, yeah, I think that's the way this went. You know, I mean, to be down 20-3 and fight back and everything was a good effort by USC. But there was too many opportunities early in the game that they just didn't capitalize on.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, again, I mean, we'll say this a million times and everybody's going to shake their head, but it's a reflection of how they practice. If you can practice where there are no consequences to maybe not playing hard on every play. I mean, you know, a lot of times you'll hear the USC coaches saying, 10 guys did it right, one guy did it wrong. Or the players are even, you know, talking about that. That's why this team, you know, can run the ball here, run the ball there, and then when they really have to run the ball, they can't run the ball or whatever. I mean, the little execution things. I had a chance for Ben Griffiths. They had one of the, you know, great days a punter's ever had, and none of the cover team could locate the football. It was like they were wearing blindfolds. I mean, they're running in different directions, and here's the ball, ready. I mean, in the spring, they did that almost every day. And, you know, they were catching the ball and downing it, and everybody – and I guess they haven't done it now that we've seen it, haven't really done that almost at all in the fall. And, you know, you probably got to practice stuff like that. But, you know, and then unfortunately for USC, The one time they do pin Notre Dame down at the three, they give up a 97-yard touchdown drive. I mean, it's like, it's kind of maddening to watch this team with the opportunities it has not have the ability, as you said, with Notre Dame, where they just punch it in. Again, I think that's almost totally a reflection of how they practice and how demanding practice has to be and how hard you have to get it right every player, every play. And I don't think we ever see that happening. And you see what, when you get up against a good opponent on the road, you gotta be there on every play. And USC is not. And, 30-27, unfortunately, that's the result.
Yeah. Well, Dan, if you think you're frustrated, wait till we get to some of these questions, Keely.
Yes.
Well, do you have any quick thoughts, Keely, before we jump in?
I mean, to Dan's point, I am always on the sideline and in the goal line for games, and I was just really impressed by Notre Dame's ability from the first quarter to the last play of the fourth. They hit hard every single play. They knew what they were doing. They knew their assignments. And if you look back on the broadcast, that's essentially what Brian Kelly says. Like, you need 100% every single play, and that's what they did. And with USC, particularly in their defense, you could tell that the fundamentals started to break down once they got tired, once they had to come up with critical stops. And so, I mean, it's just, I have to go back with Dan about practice. It's when you're put in those tough positions, what you do comes out. And if you're not doing it on a consistent basis, you just can't expect your players to do that. So it's always been about practice. And I think it still comes back to that.
What?
Well, and the frustrating thing is you're playing a number 9 team in front of their fans, and they're all fired up, and they're playing exactly the way they're supposed to play, and they have to go into the victory formation to hold out. You know, and they got to have their coach on the field on their final onside kick and go into a victory formation just to win the game by 3 points. I mean, think about that. That USC, what if they, you know, what if USC would have been the team that would have been basically exactly who they could be, and Notre Dame wouldn't have shown up? I mean, it's frustrating because this is where a game like that shows you why USC has more 4- and 5-star players than Notre Dame does. But Notre Dame makes do with, who's a better quarterback in some way? If you just had to do the measurables, Keaton Slovis over Ian Book. But Ian Book, you know, has this drive and he's got the ability to run the ball. And Notre Dame had the ability to know exactly when to use his ability to run the ball and take advantage of USC's inability to tackle and inability to get in the right, get the right pursuit angles and all the kind of things that they did. And that still only produced a 3-point win for Notre Dame, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, we got to jump into these questions. Before we do, you got homecoming coming up, and our sponsor Trader Joe's can certainly help you with homecoming. You gotta go. It's a 6:30 game. It's on the Pac-12 Network, so you should go because you probably can't watch it at home. Head over to USC. Make sure you go to the USC Village. Check out Trader Joe's. I would challenge you, just, you know, bring a couple of those Trader Joe's USC bags that you got from us before. Go in there, and whatever you need for the tailgate, just go into Trader Joe's, pick it all up, and boom, you're done. You don't have to bring anything. You walk it over to campus, you put your little blanket down on some grass, and have some fun. And I think you can, you know, enjoy the homecoming festivities. Now, it might be hard to find a piece of grass because it is homecoming. There's a lot of stuff going on. But get your stuff. Go over there. You have your nice tailgate, and you can get some nice beer, wine, cheeses, all kinds of snacks. I started eating, which is a little bit addicting, those pretzels filled with peanut butter. Those are pretty darn good. So I would recommend those.
Those are addicting.
Yeah, those are like...
You got to watch out.
I keep popping them, like come home, pop a few more in there. So that's what I pick up. But definitely go over to Trader Joe's, check it out for homecoming. That's the place to be. So that, I think that's changed the way you can tailgate at USC, having a Trader Joe's right across the street. So hope you guys go and check it out. And Keely, I don't know. Do we maybe we should talk like kind of game stuff first, because there's a lot of big picture stuff.
Yeah,
there's a lot of,
we got to navigate this because there's a lot of topics. So let's start off with the game stuff and then go bigger picture. So let's start off with a question from Bruce. He says, Marquise Steph is a good running back, but has he caught a pass this season? I believe one of the running back's responsibilities in Harrell's offense is being a safety outlet for the quarterback. Carr has great hands and so does Vavai, so I think they are both needed. Steph does get more yards when the offensive line has not opened any holes, but do you think Steph will make it through the season if he has to run through a brick wall every time he carries the ball? I think all three backs bring something a little different to the table. When will Mr. Drevno get the offensive line to help out in the run game? Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're doing, a decent enough job on the offensive line. I mean, I think they're protecting the quarterback decently. I mean, it's not spectacularly well, but I thought, against that Notre Dame defense, I thought that was a pretty good effort. I do think, now with Vi out with surgery, Marquise has got no choice but to catch the ball. USC's got no choice but to throw it to him. I mean, it was surprising. He carried it 10 times for 82 yards. But after the game, Graham Harrell kind of let out that he said something about it looked like he was sucking wind there. And then I think he realized, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that. And said, well, he's going to get more carries. But it was like, no, there was no reason for us to be, running him more than that, because that's about all he would seem to be able to handle. I wish USC's coaches didn't coach out of a sense of kind of fear of, oh, is he going to be able to, is he going to drop the ball? Is he going to be able to catch it? Is he going to be able to pick up pass protection? Is he going to be in good enough shape? I mean, my thought right now is he better be in good enough shape to run the ball more than 10 times. The Notre Dame kid, Tony Jones, ran it 25 times. I mean, what if USC had a legitimate power running attack to go with a passing attack? And Notre Dame got a power running attack, but they don't necessarily have the ability to throw the ball down the field. And USC does. I'm just thinking that alone, if going into the second half of the season, if USC was able to really become a power running team, there's no reason. I mean, that offensive line, they're athletic enough. They've got to commit to it. They've got to believe in it. And if you do, and if you run Marquise, I mean, he ran 8.2 yards a carry. If you got a guy running 8.2 yards a carry, the defense has to come up to try to stop the run. And then you set up the deep ball. You set up a lot of things in the passing game. So, I don't think it's not rocket science. I mean, they might be better off going back to, what they did, in the past, where they said they wanted to be able to make you defend the run and then throw it over you. But that may not be a bad way to go if you want to try to win the last six games. So.
Yeah. I mean, when you looked at when they had success throwing the ball, what happened before that was that they had success running the ball. You had to have Notre Dame had to respect the run game in order to open up things up. And it just doesn't seem like they're willing to commit to the run. And Dan, you talked about how they're not consistent enough where they'll do one run and then kind of shy away from it.
Yeah, I mean, they have that bad first down play or something. Now you got second and 10, and now you got to kind of throw the ball. And that's just that intensity that you just get play after play after play, right? And that's how they got to do it. I mean, I think you got to be of the mindset that, oh, you're going to drop eight on us? Okay, great. We're going to run it right down your throat. Great. Thank you. Here we come. It's just that's that attitude. I don't quite see that they're there yet. That sense of whatever you do, we've got something to, counter that. And we're looking for you to do either one because we're going to come after you. And because they were so tentative, for example, I thought to some extent, in turning the offense loose the first half, where they had things kind of going their way, but they still weren't maybe as aggressive and running as much tempo. And Graham Harrell admitted it, that at halftime he realized he needed to speed things up. And he literally sped things up by getting the play calls in quicker. Well, I thought that was almost an absolute requisite for this offense, that the play calls would come fast. But the second half they did, and you saw how much better that, he said it works two ways. One, it keeps USC from worrying about if something went wrong in the play before. The second part, it doesn't give the other team, you know, time to really get ready, get set on defense. I think both of those are in USC's favor. And one would hope that that also would start happening where you'd see more tempo on offense.
Yeah. Let's go to a question from Paul in Orlando. He says, hello, Ryan, Dan, and Keeley. Love your show and listen all the time. I had a couple comments and a question. First, I felt Keaton Slovis in the offense played well after the first quarter. And given that Keaton hadn't played for nearly a month, I thought he was very good. Marquise is amazing in the way that he breaks tackles. Even Ben Griffiths, Keeley's favorite, I'm not sure about that, but okay, had some great punts. Defense, I thought, especially the DBs and the D-line were very good. My concern and question is where and why are the teams running all over the defense, especially on the edge? Is it the linebackers? P.S. With the right coaching staff, the outcome is different, I am sure. We should be 6-0 with our talented and hard-playing team. Thanks, and fight on, Paul in Orlando.
Well, I mean, I think it's tough now that they've gone to the four-man front, and you see those guys, the two ends, have the option of standing up or getting a hand on the ground, and you've got two linebackers. Okay, so the coverage at the edge isn't exactly great if the defensive ends are coming down and protecting off tackle, or they're in kind of in pass rush mode. It just looks like, so then you've got the corners basically who have to support the run on the edge. I think some of it is schematic. Some of it was poor, you know, Christian Rector trying to play on that high ankle sprain that it just isn't healing really fast. And Notre Dame is so good at isolating him and putting him in this, you know, situations where he's got to make an open field tackle against one of their speed backs, and that's just not tenable. I mean, you can't be in that situation. So whatever it was USC did schematically, and whatever it was Notre Dame did to get USC overloaded to one side and reacting, and then coming back, and nobody at USC seemed to react to it. I just think they're in a tough. The way they line up on defense, it makes it really tough to cover the edge. You got two middle line inside linebackers. You're going to get one of them over there, or you know you can line one of them up wide, but still Notre Dame, you know, can make you react one way and come back the other way. Teams are smart, and they know where USC is vulnerable. And I thought the secondary, as they came out of the game, with a lot of bumps and bruises, because they were coming up and making a lot of tackles. And that's a tough deal, I think, with a young secondary, to ask them to make plays on the edge all the time. So they got to figure something out, because people see the films, and they're going to go there again and again.
We have a question from Jared who says, I'm not big on in-game questions, but I have to ask because it's been bugging me for almost a season and a half. Why does Christian Rector play defensive end? He appears to lack the lateral quickness necessary to keep contained even on average D1 skill position players. He's an in-betweener, too small to play defensive tackle and too slow to play defensive end. Maybe you could rotate him as a third down interior pass rusher. Was wondering your guys' thoughts. Thanks for all the work you do and bringing us the latest information, Jared.
Yeah, he is kind of an in-betweener. I don't think there's any doubt. And now with this, again, slow-healing ankle sprain, high ankle sprain, it puts him in a vulnerable position, especially when he's isolated. I mean, I just think that's a very difficult place for him to be. And I'm not sure what adjustments they don't look like they've made any adjustments, though. I mean, I think that's kind of unnerving, you know, when Notre Dame, for example, knows they need to come up with something. They come up with that 51-yard reverse for a touchdown. Where you know, if Christian would have hit a baseball bat, he couldn't have done any good. He would need a gun. He would have needed a gun to stop that guy, because there was just, he wasn't going to get anywhere near that kid. And the farther they ran, the farther behind he got. And that was, and then there's no other USC player in the picture. I mean, it just. Yes, he got to do something. You got Khalil Tate this week, and he better be able to tackle quick, athletic, especially quarterbacks. And that, again, I think is a reflection of practice, because it makes the USC defenders, I think, a little tentative, because they know that they don't do that full speed in practice, and so they become a little hesitant to try to, you know, not maybe always go all out and try to, you know, get in the, where they think that, that, you know, the running back's going to go with the ball. And, you know, they're just, you know, that hesitation, I think, really, really, really hurts them. And then the ability to finish. So you're playing against a kid like that, you know, either Brook or Jones, you know, they're not going to go down with just a grab. I mean, poor Christian, I think a couple of times where he got his arm or he got his hand on, you know, the running back, and the guy just kept running and he ended up on the ground. And got to figure something out. But right now, we haven't seen any anything about that, and we ask about it, but we don't hear any answers.
I think the predicament too they have with Rector is that he's not 100%, but I don't think that they trust Connor Murphy or a Caleb Tremblay to fully replace him there. So I think they're kind of in a catch 22 where you want Rector out there because he's the guy in the depth chart to be that guy, but he's also not healthy. So, and I keep asking, like, at what point are you not getting enough from Rector where you need to put someone else in? And they're kind of coy about it, obviously. But I just think they're in a predicament there where you're not really playing with even Rector at 100%.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lack of trust. And that was one of the, I know, fatal flaws with last year's team was the coaches didn't trust the players. I'm not sure the players trust the coaches. Nobody trusted anybody, it looked like, as that thing, you know, went to pieces in the second half of the season. I don't think you can play football at a winning level at the top, you know, against good people without trusting your teammates to be there. And where do you build that trust? Practice. And that just doesn't seem to be happening. This team, I think, has a better attitude about it. I don't know if they all kind of go to their separate corners like last year's team did. You know, whether you like it or not, Clay's not wrong in terms of they still have a really good opportunity, but they have no margin for error. And again, if you don't change how you practice, I'm not sure why you would expect a difference in the results. I'm just, I think you've got to change what they're doing. But
yeah.
Will they? They pride themselves on not changing.
Right.
On sticking
We're
going to
stick
plan.
With our plan. Yeah. It's funny, it's used so much lately, but the, you know, and people get it wrong all the time. But you know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. But it does, I mean, it applies because you're, if you want to be better, you got to practice better. And for whatever reason, they're just like, nope, we made a decision to practice this way and going forward, doing it. So, but Dan, we'll play a voicemail for you here. Our buddy Curtis in Moreno Valley called. I think 5 times since Sunday morning and called like 2 or 3 times before that.
See, we joke about this being free therapy, but I think Curtis really takes it seriously.
Curtis, yeah. I think Curtis wants me to answer the phone when this is going on. It's going right to voicemail, Curtis. We love you, but I can't play 5 voicemails every show. So we'll play one of them. But this was an interesting point about, you know, what was the biggest issue USC going on the road, turning the ball over? Well, didn't turn the ball over this time, but still lost. But I'll play this for you and get your thoughts, Dan.
Curtis from Moreno Valley. Hey, no turnovers against Notre Dame. Great job. Hope we can do that the rest of the season. This was the best team on our schedule, and they barely beat us. They were afraid. 2 deep safeties, 20 yards back the whole game. With all their talent, they still had to do that. We're forcing people to do what they don't want to do, and you can run on it. Now since Malapai is out, we're going to have to introduce the fastest player in California 100-meter history at tailback every now and then. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Yeah, I mean, his name was mentioned for the kind of without anybody asking that question. They mentioned Keenan Christian after the game. I guarantee you they've had a plan that, oh, we're going to play him 4 games and save his red shirt. I just think, you know, if a kid, I don't know how many of those kids are going 5 years now anyway. I just think if there's a place for him, and there has been, you know, outlet passes. And I mean, USC could have maybe the fastest player on the field virtually every game. I would have thought that there were ways you could get him in the game, sneak him in the game, you know, there are times if you give him an outlet pass and the defense is just a little bit tilted one way, he might beat everybody down the sideline. I mean, just a free touchdown if that could happen. But we just don't see the ability to be, you know, that kind of, you know, let's get him out there and see what he can do. I would guess you will see him out there some going now. I mean, they're committed. They've got to get him. I mean, Clay said, you know, he loves that four game red shirt rule. So he'll be out there. It's just a matter of when, you know, if you say, well, we'll wait till the last four games. I just think you get him out there and see what happens at this point. He's a tough kid. He's shocked. I mean, the first thing everybody was shocked about was he's physical. He'll put his head in there. He'll bust it up inside. He's not afraid. He's not like a track star who's also playing football. He's a football player. So, I think that could be, you know, the opportunity for them to, you know, figure out something else they can do on offense. But I would really be disappointed if he's not on the field this weekend.
We have an email from Michael from Newport who says, has anyone asked USC if they filed a complaint for Coach Kelly being on the field or the Phantom roughing the passer call that led to the game deciding 3-point score for the Irish? Or has the Pac-12 come out with any statement on how the officiating impacted the game? Overall, it's hard to complain that officiating caused USC to lose the game. However, it is weird that one game when Mothershed officiates a game, USC is penalized in double digits, and another only twice. Did Keeley or Shotgun catch anything from the sidelines that could explain this? Thanks and fight on, Michael from Newport. No, not really. Can't explain that.
Yeah. At least Clay, you know, did jump on it and got really upset, and you could tell the look on the face of the officials. You couldn't tell if it was, what are you talking about? We have no idea. We were watching the ball, or if you were watching the ball, Kelly was lined up. If that, the guy who catches the tight end who catches the onside kick, if he would have keeled over, Kelly would have gotten the ball on the next bounce. That would have been Kelly's recovery. So you missed that. How is that even remotely possible? And I thought that qualified for the kind of transparency that the Pac-12 is bragging about, that they've had to use twice in road games where their officials didn't perform. And I thought this would have been another one where they said, they should have said, we didn't see it. We can't believe we didn't see it. It's, you know, it's our fault. But they should have come out with that Sunday night, like they've been bragging about, that they're going to be transparent and they're going to admit those kinds of mistakes. And they say only in like key moments, they got to be a big enough play. You know, and you can say, well, a long shot, onside kick's a long shot, but it's a 3-point game. USC, you know, they get the 15-yard penalty. So then Notre Dame is now, or USC is now kicking off from the Notre Dame, from the 50, I guess. Yeah, they'd be kicking off from the 50. Well, if you get an onside kick recovered that you're kicking from the 50, you got at least two shots at the end zone. So that was probably something that we should have heard from the Pac-12, and we didn't. We'll find out today from Clay whether they pushed him, what the Pac-12 told him, you know. But, that was ridiculous. And do you ever hear in these intersectional games where the visiting team brings the officials, do you ever hear a game where the two previous games where that happened this year for the Pac-12, at Ole Miss with Cal and at Michigan State with Arizona State. In both of those games, the call went in favor of the Pac-12 team. At Notre Dame, oops, it didn't go in favor of UCLA. UCLA really got screwed there. Mother's head now. This guy, he officiated half the USC's fall camp practices and still calls them UCLA. It's just amazing. And then that got the Notre Dame students into calling, you know, the mocking chant of UCLA, UCLA for USC, which I think shows you the Notre Dame students are pretty hip, but they realized that calling USC UCLA would be like the ultimate insult. And but come on, you got to get better than that, Pac-12.
So Jeff, the math teacher, has two questions, one of them relating to what we just talked about. He says, I assume that when these non-league games are scheduled, details like which officiating crews work the games are negotiated between the two athletic departments. Shouldn't USC's athletic department be trying to bargain for anyone but Pac-12 officials to be on the assignment? AKA, here's the deal, Notre Dame. We'll continue to play you every year as long as we don't have our own officials working the game. Thoughts, Dan?
Well, you know, we used to kid about that maybe is what USC ought to do. Is USC, there were times when USC got a better deal. And for a while, the Notre Dame would bring Big Ten officials. And you would get a better deal in the Coliseum from the Big Ten officials than you did from the Pac-12. So that was kind of a joking point. You almost have to have your officials to protect you anymore if you're going on the road in a big game. But the problem is the competence of the Pac-12, I'm not sure they're competent enough to even protect you, even if they wanted to. Although, you know, they did obviously protect the Cal and Arizona State. They just weren't competent enough to protect USC. And I do think they were a little intimidated. I mean, the fact that USC in Pac-12 officiated games, I think the total is 16.75 penalties for both teams. So then you get, you know, the Notre Dame game, and there are just 7 penalties. I think the fact that this is a big national game in prime time at Notre Dame, I think it intimidated the Pac-12 officials a little bit. Whether that was a good thing for USC or not, I would think there looked like, Healy, you saw it, looked like a lot of holding going on down there.
Yeah.
On the field. I mean, Notre Dame looks like Stanford when Stanford's good. And, they, you know, basically there was a lot of holding going on.
Yeah, but it tends to happen. I mean, it happened in the Utah game, happened in UW. And I talked to some of the defensive line guys, and they're like, yeah, you just assume it's going to happen every game, but it's what you can do about it. And Chad Kay said as much, too. But consistency would be nice from officials.
Yeah, I mean, that same crew had, I think it was 17 flags on Utah and 12 or something on
11,
USC.
11 on USC, yeah.
Yeah. And then you go there and it's like really hard to find one. And the one that they did call was like, you know, the roughing the passer was a terrible one. So I'm sure USC had other penalties in that game too that they didn't get called. But there's like, yeah, it just, that's not consistent. If you have an umpire, you want him to be consistent. Maybe his strike zone's a little big. Maybe it's a little small. But whatever,
you know what it is.
Right. If he gives you the inside pitch or whatever, you know, and with the Pac-12, it's more of a random factor. Like it might be.
You have to like feel it out each game.
Yeah. You just don't know.
And it's random in the game itself. That's the other thing. It's not just from game to game. One game they call one way, one game they call the other. It's from play to play. You're not sure. You know, what I mean, and the USC people were upset because they said, hey, you think Keaton didn't get hit later than that and no call? Yeah, he did. It was just normal play, but he, you know, Book didn't get the latest hit on a quarterback in that game, but when it happened to Keaton, there was no call. I mean, that's I don't blame them for being a little upset.
And then Jeff has a second question. He says, also, what happened to all the talk of air raid finding open grass? From what I've seen, Pittman and Vaughns almost never run routes that take them more than 5 yards away from the sidelines. Thanks, Jeff, the math teacher from Fountain Valley.
I think when they drop the two safeties, in the middle of the field, and then and they basically drop eight, and that was a surprise because I don't think Notre Dame would do that as much. But they're basically saying we're not going to let you have any open grass, and you're going to have to figure places in between. And then they basically doubled Pittman the whole time. I mean, they're all afraid of Pittman; they're not going to let Pittman beat you. So I thought they did a good job of finding Amon-Ra and getting those shallow crosses that he does so well. I just think they need to run more plays. They need to run the offense faster, and they need to give themselves chances to make more plays. They just have to do that. You don't want it looking like a regular offense. And right now it looks more like, you know, kind of just a regular old offense. And I thought that was not the idea this year, that you would make teams. So you get Notre Dame dropping eight. They don't do that almost ever. So that's not something. So now you got them out of their comfort zone. That's a good thing for you. And you've got to figure out how to, you know, take advantage of it. And I'm not sure that you know, obviously they can do bad with the passing attack, but just 35 pass attempts. Last year, I think USC threw the ball, was it 37 times in the first half? 30, something like, you know, against Notre Dame. And so that's kind of the way you maybe needed to go. And yet they'll say, well, but our run game was going well too. But it's got to pay off a little bit more. You can't stop yourself. And that's where, you know, that consistency comes in. And I think consistency is what happens in practice.
We got a voicemail question. We got a lot, but here's the next one, I guess. Here you go.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I think a number of people have called in and spoke to Clay Helton's sort of repeated sense of communication with how he approaches every single game. You know, he says, the guys played hard, they did their best, and sort of repeats the same things, whether it's a win or a loss, and know that bothers a lot of the fans that have tuned in and want to see him a little bit more fiery. I guess my question is in relation to the team's communication department. I know, or I've been watching the Pac-12 Network and seen the guy Tim Tessalon or Tessalon and him come up, and it seems like he's more of a information type of communicator, as far as he would be able to tell you game notes or how many touchdowns a USC quarterback has thrown in consecutive games, but never got the sense that he was much for strategic communications, and wondering if there is a strategic communications officer for the team, because it seems like there is definitely room for one that could help sort of retell this narrative for Clay and help him realize that every time he gets put up for a press conference, he digs his own grave with the way that he speaks. Thanks for taking the question and for all that you guys do.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think Clay is his own strategic communication guy, and I don't think that's ever been built in much to USC. It's mostly, you know, we're USC. If we're good, everybody pays attention to us and listens to us. And if not, we'll just all look the other way and act like it's not our fault. But yeah, I think Clay could do with some coaching and some of the themes I think that he has developed. I think fans want to see, okay, we're really pissed off now. This shouldn't have happened. We shouldn't be 3-3. We ought to be at the, you know, worst 5-1, just because Notre Dame is, you know, number 9 in the country and we're on the road. And the game turned out the way, and they played really well. But you don't hear that. You know, you want somebody that is just beside himself after the BYU game. And then at Washington, you want somebody who would say what I would have said is, that's a team we should have beat. Not like, oh, 28-14, hey, we weren't bad. That was pretty good. I thought, you know, did you see us run the ball there? You know, hey, I feel pretty good about this. I mean, that's the game, I think, where you need strategic communication. You do not come out and say, we did pretty well here against Washington, because you need somebody who says, they're not very good, which they're starting to prove that they're not that good at all. And that was a game that absolutely USC should have won. So yeah, you want a coach who's a little more in tune with how the fans are reacting to the game, and reinforces that and says, you know, not that, oh, we're on the right track, we're just almost there. You know, we're going to emphasize fundamentals and techniques, or we're going to identify what's wrong. No, you don't want to. Who cares about identifying what you did wrong? Stop it. Don't do it anymore. Practice it so that you don't keep doing it. But that idea, well, we're going to catalog it and we'll put a big chart up and we'll say, you know, big X's that don't do this and don't do that. No, go out and practice so you don't do this and don't do that. But that, yeah, I think strategic communications is a lost art at USC. I mean, how badly did they strategically communicate in the NCAA case? You know, has anybody ever done worse than USC in the way they responded, with all the opportunity that they had, all the corruption at the NCAA, all the, you know, things that the NCAA, you know, got away with, all the, you know, all the bad acting the NCAA did, and USC just kept quiet. And I think that you need to have, I think that's a really good point. Strategic communication from the point of view of USC would really be a good thing. But
I don't think, for the sports information department, that's my understanding, that's not really their job. They don't really have, no one that I know of that would be doing that. Like, sports information is like the media relations people, but they're not necessarily coming up with, like, here's what the message that you want to send out from the coaching staff or anything.
What I'd like is, as a former sports information director, I think one of the jobs you can do, and they do a little coaching of the players and how to do interviews and all of that. I don't think it would be wrong to coach the coaches. And I don't think it would be wrong to be listening to what the fans are saying and maybe responding to telling the coach, it wouldn't be maybe a bad idea to emphasize this or de-emphasize that or whatever. I think that's where being a professional, public relations person, I just think they don't have anyone who sees their job as public relations. They see their job as media information or as we see every single game, media management. See that corner back there? I want all you guys back in that corner. I don't want any of you near the post game meal table at all. Get back there. Okay. That's probably the emphasis that we get from USC. And you'd probably like to see that emphasis a little bit broader and a little bit more proactive, I would think.
We have an email from Rodney from Fort Lewis, Washington, who says, "Well, boys, our team played hard. We have a real talented bunch of boys on our team, and I feel like we stayed in the game because of the talent on our team, not because of the talent of our coaches. Get rid of this coaching staff ASAP. There's no reason SC should have lost this game. USC has way too much talent on their hands to be losing games. If we had a coach that knew how to use this plethora of talent that we have here at SC, we would have another national title on our hands. How did USC lose this game, and what are the key factors on why USC lost this game?"
Well, I mean, I think you could almost even accept, okay, 30-27 on the road at Notre Dame, they played well. If you hadn't lost at Washington and at BYU, you'd be 5-1. If Notre Dame's number 9, you'd probably be number 10, whatever. And you'd still have a chance to finish a really strong season that you could all feel proud of. The fact that you've already lost 2 games to not Notre Dame, to inferior teams, I think is the problem. And then the idea that, Notre Dame played really well, and they barely held on to beat a USC team that didn't play all that well all the time. And mixed in, good plays with the bad, still looks like they need to do some work on defense. And yet there they were challenging them, right at the end. And USC, it's just that they're so close in so many ways, considering all of the issues. And, yeah, I mean, if you come away from that game, you say, wow, Notre Dame is really well coached. And I don't ever remember somebody saying, man, that USC team is well coached. It's like we asked Clay last week about, you always hear the comments about like a Notre Dame, boy, they're physical. Hey, they're really physical. I said, when do you ever hear that about USC? When does anybody ever say, they say they're talented or they scare you because of some of the things they can do, score quickly and be explosive and all that. But I can't even remember the last time somebody said, yeah, that USC, they're a physical team. No, they're not. And yet that was the big secret. I think the whole Pete Carroll time, until it kind of faded off at the end, was USC had the reputation of being, Hollywood and stars and whatever. And they'd get on the field with those SEC teams or those Big Ten teams, and they punch them in the mouth, and everybody'd say, wow, they're way more physical. We didn't quite realize how physical they were. That's what USC's got to be. They got to become much more, a physical force out there. And, it just is not happening.
Back to the messaging, we got a text from Sir Eric of Troy who says, "Is Helton delusional or is it us? Clay Helton seems to think that all he has to do to be considered a successful head coach is to win the southern half of the weakest conference in the group. I say this because he couldn't care less about how we appear on the national scene or any game we lose outside of the Pac-12 South. Is it possible that someone told him this and we are the ones who are silly enough to think otherwise? I mean, hey, he fooled us once already when we thought he would be gone, though he did not appear worried at all. Might he know something we do not? He speaks of the Pac-12 South not as a consolation prize, but as his only goal, as if we should all see that as good enough. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's why I refuse to go with a bad prediction for the season. I'm not going to lower my expectations based on other people. And, you know, I don't think you should let USC off the hook and say, well, all that matters is the Pac-12 South getting into the championship game. No, that's not. You're USC. You got to act like it. And, but there's where, I mean, I think Clay is a strategic, communicator. I mean, he's got a message and he sticks to it. And, has the expectations been lowered? Absolutely. Is that a good thing? Absolutely not. But there is a kind of communication strategy going on at USC right now. And, it was one that said, for example, it doesn't matter what happens at Notre Dame. And this is before the game, because we still have our whole second half and our whole Pac-12 South future ahead of us. So, now obviously in the next couple of weeks, that could come to a crashing halt. If you don't win games where you just absolutely positively, have to win them. One of the things they've got to build up some steam, in these next 2 weeks, because then you got Oregon coming in and you want a crowd. You want to have the same kind of crowd Notre Dame had behind them. And, that's not going to happen if you don't perform the next 2 weeks, but we'll see, what they do to maybe change things up enough to so you can walk away from, playing somebody good like when you get Oregon in here, or you can have the kind of team that will not give teams like Arizona and Colorado a chance to stay in the game. And we haven't seen that yet.
Before we jump in to the rest of the questions, I want to tell you guys about SeatGeek. So I know a lot of people, they write in, they want to get tickets for the different USC football games. It's hard. They want to know which way to go. So a lot of these websites just seem like they're making it difficult on purpose. SeatGeek certainly does not do that. It's a great way to go check out live sporting events or any kind of other live events. And they use a price match guarantee on SeatGeek. They're proving there's a better way. They have millions of those events on the app, which you have to make sure you download. So it could be live music, comedy shows, certainly USC games, sporting events, things like that. So make sure you check it out on SeatGeek. They're five-star reviews from over 50,000 people on their app. So I want you to check it out. I have it up right now. Say you want to go to USC Arizona for homecoming. Look throughout. They show you where the tickets are throughout the stadium. There's little green dots for the better deals, yellow and red dots but not as good deals. And when you click on any of the deals, it'll show you the view from those seats, where you're going to be. They give you all kinds of information on it. There's a ton of information on the website, and you're going to have an informed decision on what you want to do as far as buying tickets to the game. So make sure you check it out on the SeatGeek app. And right now, they're going to give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So all you got to do is download use the promo code USC when you download the SeatGeek app. They'll give you $10 off your first purchase. Use promo code USC for $10 off your first purchase. So check it out. Let us know how you feel.
Let's jump back in with a question from our buddy Stephen Poway, who says, I'm fine with all the criticism that will be lodged at Clay Helton this week in the aftermath of another loss at Notre Dame. There simply was no answer for the ground game that Notre Dame had, and that was very frustrating. However, I will say that I really love the heart and the fight that this team shows. They're never completely out of games. They never give up. And this week, they actually look poised and disciplined, even when they couldn't tackle to save their lives. This team is a paradox. Would you agree, Stephen Poway?
Yeah, that's the Steve, you're exactly right to be frustrated, because when you have a turnover-free game, almost penalty-free game, where you get a running attack going, you get a guy who's a real threat, averaging 8.2 yards a carry, you think, oh man, this is what you need to do. And again, you maybe pick the wrong time to do it against, you know, the team that probably going to be the toughest to beat, you know, on this schedule. But yeah, that inability to kind of match everything. For example, that game probably absolutely wins at BYU. That game, I think, beats Washington. I was so not impressed with them. So, you know, then you're a 5-1 team if you can just play that game. And you got to, you know, we get to see most of the Notre Dame game. And they basically go out and they just be Notre Dame. They just go out and boom, boom, boom. This is who we are. This is what we do. And they do it. And I don't know that we have any sense of who is this USC team other than, as you said, they don't quit. They keep playing. You know, they're convinced that, hey, we can do this, but they don't have the ability to sustain it and to do it every play or to do it consistently one way or another way from game to game and week to week. And yeah, that's frustrating. I mean, that's almost worse than being bad is being pretty good and still not getting the results where you see, oh, wow, we could have, should have, but didn't quite. Yeah, it's frustrating. This team is not easy to you know, to follow and feel really good about because you feel, you know, bad about the opportunities wasted.
One of the questions is we get a lot like, well, what if JT Daniels was healthy for the whole season? You're like, yep, that's fair. But then you could also ask, what if someone else was coaching this exact same group of players? Like, what would USC's record be? And I like, if Urban Meyer's coaching this team, they're undefeated. Like, there's not a question about it. The same exact players with the same injuries, you know? So I think you could look at some different things. That's what the issue is that coming off 5-7, 3-3 is not good enough. BYU's not very good. They're just not. They're 2-4 right now. They lost again. This is a team that should be better than what it is. And that's why fans are frustrated. They should not be 3-3 right now. They should not have been 5-7 last year. And if you practice differently, you coach differently, you had a better staff, all that kind of stuff, you would be. And to me, it's just the time has run out on these guys.
Yeah, you knew what you were coming into this season. You can't lose the BYU game. And you really shouldn't build up Washington to be a better team than it is. I mean, and that's one of the good things. We get to go see the games in person. And you can tell how talented, how athletic a team is. And, I mean, I'll be honest. I couldn't tell after the Washington game whether Clay really believed that they were good or just was saying that. Because they weren't very good. They weren't very athletic. They didn't have a lot of guys that would start at USC, for example. And yet, you know, they win by 2 touchdowns. That was ridiculous. Again, that's not preparing your players to go and have success. It was like they tiptoed into, you know, Husky Stadium and, oh, I hope we can stay on the field with this team that's not nearly as good as we are. It's like, what? Come on. And, you know, when you see Keaton, for example, have a game like Saturday, you think, what was going on, you know, at BYU? How is that? I know it was only his second game, but still, you know, what Graham keeps saying about how special, you know, Keaton is, I don't think he's totally wrong there. But then you get a 3-interception game and you think, where did that come from? You know, is that preparation? Is that the game plan? What didn't happen? And something didn't happen.
Keely, I know you hate when I do this. I'm sorry, but I got to like do a little tangent. I know we don't have a lot of time, but okay. While we were doing this, and I instantly thought this when I saw it was a tweet from the USC Trojans account. I don't know if you saw this. Did you have any sense? So USC tweeted out, on Saturday, USC will host its annual zero waste game with the recycle emoji there. Yeah. At President Folt has some tips to help USC win the Pac-12 with zero in the zero waste challenge or the Pac-12 zero waste challenge. Fight on hashtag USC zero waste. And so I was like, uh-oh, there's going to be some replies to this. Because I mean, they could reply, you know, they could tweet out USC cured cancer and there's going to be all kinds of fire Clay tweets. But when you do something like that, so Stuart Mandel tweeted up, can't tee him up like that, with a picture of that tweet. And then the first three replies are from our buddy Jason Kane. Is that Jason Longhorn Country?
That's Jason from Japan, who actually sent us a question this week.
Oh, okay. Jason from Japan. He says, fire Helton, you'll remove the most waste on our campus. Super trader, Helton wasting school's money. Whatever said, every game is a pile of waste with Clay Helton. So you knew there was going to be something. And
it's social media. What do you expect?
Right. But that's still like, if you want to talk about strategic play, like maybe that strategic communication stuff, like that could have helped.
Okay. So, but they're doing this Pac-12 challenge. What are they supposed to do? Not tweet about it?
I think you have to do it in a different way. Like
what though, Ryan?
I don't know. I mean,
they're in a corner.
Yeah. It was like the end. Remember, if you were the end of last year, where they had to stop interviewing Clay Helton, because even if you put a picture of him, you could have put a picture of Clay Helton on the screen saving a baby from a burning building, and they would have booed it. Like, that's where it was. So, yeah, so I don't know if you could actually tweet something, but I don't know. Maybe it, I don't know. What do you think, Dan? It's
yeah. I mean, you could say things like, okay, we know this in the big picture doesn't matter at all to any of you fans out there, but still, we're going to do it for the planet. We're going to save the planet and win a football game Saturday or something like that. But you maybe got to kind of make fun of yourself a little bit or step back and act like you understand how not important it is. And I know the Pac-12 is number one in zero waste. And I don't know, was USC number one in the Pac-12? Or I know they were challenging for the top spot.
I mean, I'm going to the tweet, every single reply is a negative Helton thing, except for one where the person thinks that President Fault looks like Carol Burnett. Like, that's the only, those are the only replies.
I actually can see that though.
But yeah, no, I guess it's pretty funny. I can see that too. But like, I don't know.
Oh, I just don't know what the solution is there, Ryan.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think that some of it is a little self-awareness. And USC doesn't always seem like they're aware of what the world is thinking and saying about them. And if you were, you'd probably be some real work to get a tweet that you think you have to get it out, but you got to do it in a way that the people out there know, okay, they get it. They know what the deal is. And I just don't think you can send something out where you totally don't get what people are going to say as soon as you send it out. I mean, I guarantee you whoever sent that tweet out is surprised at the reaction. And you got to be smarter than that.
Anyway, let's move on to an email from Steve, USC class of 97, who says, first a comment and then a question. The 3-point loss to Notre Dame is even more maddening than if USC had been blown out. They have the players and the team plays hard, but then they're making the same mistakes week after week, which comes back to coaching. With a better coaching staff, this team could be 5-1 or even 6-0. Now on to the question. The conventional wisdom at the beginning of the season was that USC's first 6 games were brutal and the schedule would ease up in the second half. However, my back of the napkin math shows that the combined record of USC's first 6 opponents is 22-14, and the combined record of their next 6 opponents is also 22-14. How do you rate the back half of their schedule, and what do you think this means for the team going forward? Thanks, and fight on, Steve, USC class of 97.
Yeah, the front half is still probably a little better, just because, you know, they caught Utah short week and on the road. That was a super break. So maybe you don't, you know, count that Utah team as that Utah team because the numbers are ridiculous as far as Pac-12 teams on the road on Friday. They're screwed. But with the presence of Notre Dame on the road, you probably got to go with the front half. The thing that's changed is the way Cal and Arizona State are playing. I think you had the sense that Oregon was going to be good. I think they're a little, they were going to be a challenge. They've got, you know, some talent and all of that. They look like they're managing things better on defense than we've seen. So Oregon becomes more of a threat than you thought, even at the Coliseum. And then you've got the two road games at Cal and Arizona State, both of whom with very little talent, I thought, last year. A couple of players here and there, but both beat USC at USC. So The second half, but not a walk in the park. I mean, I think USC is probably capable of losing to everybody on the schedule in the second half. I don't think, obviously, if you could lose to UCLA the way USC did last year, that's a possibility. So, I mean, this is the kind of schedule that you better show up every week. You better be ready every week. Your coaches better be ready. You better consistently play up to your ability, and no more excuses. Stop the excuse making. Stop the we tried hard or whatever. No, you're better than USC. Better than everybody on the second half of the schedule. They've got better players. They should not lose. But I don't know if anybody's going to make that bet that they could run the table on the back end of the schedule. But they've gotten a choice, I think, at this point. They put themselves in a box.
Yeah. We have a voicemail, and this person has a little bit of beef to pick with you, Dan. So we'll play it here.
Uh-oh.
Be careful. Here we go.
Hi, guys. Daniel out of Los Angeles. Just have a quick beef with Dan Weber. Dan Weber's a good guy. He means well. He does great work. But this past weekend, yesterday on his instant analysis, Dan kept mentioning USC playing Notre Dame like it's some kind of cheat test in college football, that if you play Notre Dame tough, it means you can run through the Pac-12. And I mean, Notre Dame is decent, but let's all be honest. Just playing Notre Dame is not like playing the best in the country. Yeah, they're a good team. You know, they went toe-to-toe with Georgia last year, but Georgia completely controlled them this year from start to finish. And I know he's bringing up Oregon, like you just running through the Pac-12, hopefully Oregon. Oregon's a good team. Oregon went toe-to-toe with Auburn, whose only loss is to Florida. So, I mean, you can't just say that, playing Notre Dame tough means you walk through the Pac-12. Arizona State went down to Michigan State and handled them with ease. So these next games, Arizona State, Oregon will be really tough matches. There's no walkthrough with it, especially with this USC staff. Yes, USC has the players, Dan, but they don't have the staff to match up with these guys. They're not just going to walk in and beat Arizona State or just blow through Oregon coming to the Coliseum. These are going to be two tough games that I would like to see them win, but it's going to be tough. I don't really see USC with this coaching staff beating Oregon or Arizona State this season. I just don't. Like, Notre Dame is good, but playing them at home is not just the end-all, be-all of college football. It's still Notre Dame. I mean, they're okay, but they still have a long way to go. But fight on. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Notre Dame there's a big gulf, I think, between the top four or five. I don't think we know even how they all shake out. But there's a big gulf between, that group and then the rest of the top 10, however they deserve to be. All Notre Dame is Notre Dame is Notre Dame. Okay. They're not as talented as USC in a lot of ways. They compete like crazy. They play really hard. They're physical. They're really well coached. So that's a good challenge, I think, on the road for USC. So that's the thought is, if you can go there and play that team and play up to your ability, then you've got a chance. One of the advantages, you get Oregon at home. I mean, you got to build that in and your thinking about the schedule. So I think USC playing Notre Dame, let's say USC beats Notre Dame on the road, they should beat Oregon at home. Again, there's no obviously transit of property, that follows through on something like that. But I think Notre Dame was a good test in terms of they're a legitimate top 10 team, and they're legitimate physically, and they're legitimate in terms of their coaching and in terms of their mentality. I mean, they really expect to win every game, whether they're as good as Georgia or not. I was surprised. Georgia, now you're starting to question, how good is Georgia? And there are a lot of ways you can question everybody in the country, I think, at this point, but or not everybody, maybe not LSU, now that they've got an offense. That's pretty impressive stuff. And Oklahoma with Jalen Hurts, you got to say, wow, they've figured some things out there. But if USC, figures some things out, they have by far the best players in the past. I mean, USC has 47 four and five star players. Clemson has just 40. And Wisconsin has, I think, 9. I mean, they're just, yeah. So USC, whether you say, you know, once you get into the season and then they should, you know, do this or should do that. But basically, as you said, if you coach them up and get everything right, you ought to have a good weapon, you know, with this schedule. And I don't disagree. I think, you know, Herm Edwards has done a wonderful job at Arizona State. I mean, that, you know, go and beat Michigan State at Michigan State is just terrific. And Oregon, you know, they're handling their game day stuff better. They were not that great a team, especially on the road, but their defense is much more sound. I'm not denigrating the Pac-12. I'm just saying that if you just line everybody up in the Pac-12, USC has the best players. And does that mean, you know, and the way this season's going, if USC could have gone in there in the South Bend and beat Notre Dame, then it tells you something good is happening for USC that would play out well the second half of the season. But yeah, not to denigrate the way the Pac-12's done. I mean, Justin Wilcox has done a terrific job at Cal. Herm Edwards is just, give him all the credit in the world. Way to go at Arizona State. They have enough good players. There's no question at both of those places. And yeah, this is going to be challenging. In fact, I don't even say that the Arizona and Colorado games aren't going to be challenging. And who knows with UCLA after last year. So yeah, this is not to put the Pac-12 down. I mean, the Pac-12 is better, I think, you know, than the Big 12 or the ACC this year. And I'm not even sure, you know, head to head with the Big Ten. You could take Ohio State and Wisconsin out of there. I'm not sure where Michigan fits in. But I don't think the Pac-12, so again, that's not a put down of the Pac-12. It's just, I just thought it was a good marker for USC if they are able to show up and play. And, you know, now we say, well, it's a good half marker, but not the full game version. So, yeah, I don't know that USC's got a better chance at, in Tempe than they had in South Bend. I don't know.
Now I'm going to pull out a question, one of the questions from Pissed Off Trojan Rick, who says, re our offense, Bama and Oklahoma have elite receivers who are game planned for, but somehow they have offenses that still get them the ball. We have three elite receivers, but we never run any jet sweeps, motions, just the same old fade routes. Screw the air raid, urban or bust, there are no other options. He's elite. I don't even want to hear about anyone else who hasn't won a title. So I guess this is about the offense. So, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a question. So yeah. I guess it doesn't need an answer. But yeah, I mean, it's a good opinion. That's a good opinion. I mean, I can understand that opinion completely. It doesn't look like the air raid. You're right there. It just doesn't look like that. It looks like an offense. It just doesn't look, you know, doesn't look that much different in some ways from last year. You know, yeah. How do they not distribute the ball more? Is it their inability to immediately force teams to get out of dropping eight, for example? I mean, if they drop eight, you pound the ball down, score right away. They think twice. If they do it again and you pound it down and score again, they really think twice about you know, keeping on dropping eight. And I just think you have to punish people. And I don't look at this team as the kind of team that's going to punish you. Whereas Notre Dame, not all the time, but when they got things set up the way they wanted them, they punished USC. And I would like to see USC start punishing people. Okay, you're going to do that, we're going to punish you. That just doesn't seem to be in their DNA. And I think you need that in your DNA in college football now. Teams, you know, when Pete was here, I don't think there were as many teams that it really, really mattered to, so that they were doing things, every single thing you could do to be really good. I think it's different now. There are more teams doing things really, really well, and you can't not do them really well.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and finish up all our questions. More about the future of the program and some of the somehow fans are pretty upset the way things are going right now. So back in a minute and we'll keep going on your questions.
you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
All right, here we go. Let's play a voicemail for you, Dan. Here you go.
Hi, this is Richard from Palm Springs right after the Notre Dame game. I have to give SC credit for the way they played tonight, and maybe the passers or roughing the passer call against them was the difference in the game. Maybe it wasn't. But the same scenario, they lost the game. And it seems I've been watching the same scenario for 3 years or more. Actually, probably since Pete Carroll left, there has been no change in the way SC plays football. Win a game, lose a game, I don't see anything moving forward. And again, Dalton was saying, you know, they made one more play than we did, and then watch us here in November. We've got 6 games left to play. It's like, well, Clay, I watched you in September, I watched you in October, and I don't really see how the new president and hopefully the new athletic director can see the football program going ahead with Clay Helton as the coach and taking us to the next level, or the level that we used to be at SC, contending for national championships every year. I like Helton as a person, but the great Leo DeRocher used to say that nice guys finish last, and I feel that's the way we're going with Helton. So enjoy your show very much, and hopefully maybe SC can play a better game next week. Fight on. Take care. Bye.
Wow, I love it. Leo DeRocher. How long has it been since we've heard that quote from Leo DeRocher? Growing up, that's all you heard. I mean, that was a staple. So good job by you coming up with the old Leo DeRocher quote. Stadium superintendent at Riverfront Stadium, one of my collectibles was the managers of teams would put the scorecard up on the dugout, and they'd sign it. And most of the time that people were supposed to take those down and tear them up. But I would always check to see it. I have a scorecard signed by Leo DeRocher. I think he was managing the Cubs at the time. But, yeah, that's a great comment. And I actually got to know Happy Chandler, who was the governor of Kentucky, who was also the baseball commissioner, who, banned, Leo DeRocher for a year. And he was always really proud of bouncing Leo DeRocher out of baseball for a year. So thank you for bringing up Leo DeRocher's name. And you might be right. Nice guys do seem to be – I mean, in terms of niceness and just in general, and Clay completely treats us in ways in which I don't know that any of the other top 10 coaches in America would treat people. But I think it's hard to win national championships to be competing for them and to be just a wonderful sweetheart. Dabo Swinney looks like maybe the closest in that category, but I think college kids really need to be pushed pretty hard and disciplined and know there are consequences to taking off plays and things like that. And you don't quite see that at USC. It's just not happening. Guys do take plays off. Now, we saw Coach Chad on the sideline at the end of that game. He was not being a nice guy. I think that chair, one of the chairs survived, but he had his defensive lineman, and he was in their faces one after another, calling them selfish. And, you know, they decided to do what they wanted to do instead of what they was supposed to do, and I loved it. I mean, I don't know, Keely, were you close enough to see that? That was some good stuff.
No, I actually didn't see that. I think I was on the opposite side. What happened there?
Yeah, we had just come down, and we were right at that corner of the USC bench and just gotten on the field, you know, the last 5 minutes, and that was the Ian Book touchdown. And he was really unhappy that everybody didn't do what they were supposed to do, didn't stay where they were supposed to stay. And Coach Chad just got in every single guy's face, and you could just see the looks on their faces like, oh, no, he really is mad at us. And yes, he really was mad at them. And they were isolated in the corner, and you know, they sit in like a little U shape, and he went from one guy to the next guy to the next guy, and it was right in their face. And I thought, really good coaching. It was that kind of justified anger at, you know, a play or two plays actually back to back for the score, that was the ball game. And I think USC could benefit from more of that kind of coaching up. I think that would be a good thing on a regular basis, and it doesn't happen enough.
Now I'm going to pull an audible. I'm going to combine three questions because they essentially all ask the same thing. One is from Pissed Off Trojan Rick. The other is our buddy Eric in Duck Country, and then Fight On or Dan Class of 1962. They all essentially say, we know the thoughts about firing a coach midseason considering what happened to the last two coaches, but they're saying, can you reconsider that, especially with recruiting down the line, early signing period? It seems impulsive and a sign of impatient administration, but do you think it's become necessary and logical due to the early signing period? Stuff like that. So they essentially want us to debate that, weigh the pros and cons, and if that's the right call at this point of the season.
It's definitely changed the game to have the early signing period, which is not, it's not the early signing period. It's the signing period. That's when you sign your class. So that's late December, December 20th, or I forget what day it is this year, but that you have to have things in place then. It used to be you could take your time, you fire a coach in early December, you hire someone in mid-January, and then they have like the last 3 or 4 weeks to get signing day together. That's no longer the case, especially in USC's case where you kind of know the direction that this is going. I think Carol Fulton needed to make a move at the athletic director spot. That was great. We still haven't heard who that's going to be. I mean, the faster they can do that, the better off. At least it gives you options of what to do. I do think you could see something happen with, even without, you know, an athletic director or, you know, Dave Roberts, the interim athletic director, if there's a horrible loss coming up. I mean, 3-3, I don't know if it was a blowout by Notre Dame, would they have made some kind of move after the Washington game during the bye week? You thought there might be some kind of move. At this point, it's either not happening during the season if it happens at all, or it's going to take some kind of catalyst, some kind of bad loss. You lose to Arizona at home and everyone's up in arms. You're under 500 again. Maybe something happens at that point. I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first mistake is letting Lance Swan go into September. I mean, what was the point of that? I mean, you know, they were apparently limiting his ability to do things, the hire and fire and all of that in the summer. I don't think there was anybody who didn't think what was going to happen was going to happen. But you know, had you done it in the summer, and I know it's difficult when you're the new president, you're just here and you've got 1,000 things to do. But if you do that, you have a chance to maybe get one of the big time guys in the summer. But once the school year started, I don't think you could expect, and apparently as you would guess, that USC basically got turned down from everybody they kind of talked to quietly, especially while Lynn was still on the job. I mean, who of the other big time athletic directors is going to be negotiating for a job when the guy is still there? So I think that put them behind the eight ball already. I mean, I think everybody knew you were going to have to, make a change there. They didn't. Then they did. And now they're scrambling to find somebody who would be available on fairly short notice for something that really, really, really matters. And and now they're playing catch up, which is not unusual for USC. I think the whole question is, what coach is available? And I think everybody knows what direction we're looking at, and that changes everything. I mean, if that coach is available, I don't know that you need to have an athletic director. I don't think it matters. But then, you know, President Folt will be doing what she said she wasn't going to do, which is hire and fire football coaches. I don't see any other way around it. And I think if it's going to be Urban Meyer, she's going to ultimately make the decision anyway, because of of those issues that everybody, you know, knows about. And it's going to be her call. And I don't think she can avoid it at this point. And, you know, she might have to go back on what she said, that I don't hire and fire. But if that happens, then the athletic director doesn't become quite, you know, such a significant issue. But if you have to get an athletic director, I mean, how does he walk in on day one and say, well, I've decided this about the football coach? I think you're still in that situation where it isn't going to be easy, you know, for a guy to do that on day one. Even, you know, if he should, I mean, and most USC fans say, well, we've seen enough, but that doesn't mean the new athletic director would be able to legitimately say that. So they're kind of in a bind, I think. And then with the recruiting, I think, as it turns out, last year's class is far better than it got rated. And then it got, you added Steele and Brew McCoy and all of that. So I know people will say, oh, they were ranked 20th, and this is going to be a second straight kind of semi wipeout. I don't think last year's class was a wipeout. So, but you still can't afford a blank in this year's, in this next year's class. You can't. Although I think this roster right now, if they would, you know, keep everybody, and if they would bring in, you know, the kind of guy that they're talking about, or that the world is talking about, with an Urban Meyer, I think an Urban Meyer with this roster is absolutely capable of going to the playoffs next year. I'm completely convinced of that. So, you know, I think it, at the football coach level is where, you know, the pressure is right now. And I'm not convinced that the athletic director is the issue.
Well, speaking of athletic director, we have one final email. I believe we have one more voicemail.
Yeah,
correct,
we'll,
Ryan?
We'll save that one for last.
Alrighty, it's from Mark Child, who says, what about these resume requirements for the soon-to-be-filled AD position? Strong hands-on knowledge of broadcast media, including deep understanding of its economics, has demonstrated a willingness to confront the status quo. Strong negotiation skills that have demonstrated a success in gaining a favorable outcome for his position to the detriment of his competitors, a past history of coaching hires that have repeatedly shown an improvement over the prior coach, demonstrated strong, honest communication with the media and donors.
Yeah.
So he's okay. So he's just giving.
And I want a pony. Like, I don't, yes, those are good.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
That's all it was, guys.
I was like, was there a name yet? Like an idea? It wasn't just
like we can all craft the greatest athletic director, but it's just who's...
It's really simple, Mark. It's like someone that's been an athletic director before that doesn't know the fight song. That's all you need. Like that's I mean, if you do that, you're like 1,000 times better than where you were for the past 30 years. So that's just do that and you'll be so much better.
Yeah. But no sass to Mark. Yeah, it's not about Mark.
Yeah, as much as I'd like to see it, somebody, a professional athletic director who knows how athletic departments are supposed to run, I'd really like to see somebody who could come in and lead the Pac-12. USC needs to be a leader in the Pac-12. I mean, it's been nowhere for, you know, the last two athletic directors. And USC, the Pac-12 needs USC to lead it.
Yes.
And USC needs to lead the Pac-12. And I want a guy who has maybe a broader vision. And I want somebody who can think about, should USC stay, when push comes to shove, should USC, is that the best future for USC staying in the Pac-12? And if it's not, what is the best future for USC? And where does that go? And I want somebody who can think those thoughts. And I mean, honestly, if you approached anybody in the last two terms with something like that, they're like their eyes crossed. And we're like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. That's just, no, it's not. You need somebody, again, you know, I hate the expression, the out-of-the-box thinker and all that, but that's what you need at USC right now. You need a strong hand in the athletic department, but you need a guy with a wider, or a girl, whatever, with a wider vision. And I don't know if...
That's smart, Dan. You do need a leader. USC can lead the Pac-12. You've had a lot of followers just kind of go along with whatever. you need someone that could come in and lead and think outside the box. I'm not saying USC should leave the Pac-12, but if you're not even willing to, that should be considered. You know, you have to look at it like we have a brand. I'm the USC athletic director. Say we have a brand that's very powerful. Why are we wasting it where we are? Could we join another conference? Could we do something with UCLA and go somewhere? Could we team up with Notre Dame on NBC? Whatever it is, there's options out there that you have to at least explore, and you need a strong leader that's willing to do that. And obviously USC hasn't had strong leadership, you know, like I said, for 30 years there.
Yeah. And I know it's almost become a cliche because I say it so many times, but you can't have somebody running the USC athletic department, not only who doesn't know what the answers are, didn't know what the questions were.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, how do you come up with the right answers? You don't even know what the questions are. You need somebody who knows all the questions.
Yeah.
And has some ideas on where we're going to go to figure these things out. And honestly, I mean, you couldn't even talk about these things because there just wasn't a recognition that they were things. You know, it was like, what? What are you talking about? That's crazy. It's got to change.
Well, we got one last voicemail. So our buddy Jason Longhorn Country, he called in earlier, and there was a lengthy voicemail about the game, like specific stuff, you know, that you would normally get. And then he reconsidered, and he called back, and I feel really bad, but I'll play this for you guys, and we need to help out our buddy Jason. Here you go.
Hey, Dan, Keeley, and Ryan. This is Jason from Longhorn Country, and I just want to let you guys know I was a little upset last night, so if you probably shouldn't play that voicemail, honestly, on Tuesday. And anyways, I'm going to take a break. I just cannot stay invested in this anymore. You know, I'll keep my subscription to USCfootball.com because I like you guys. But until the USC can win four games in a row, including at least one road win, I think I'm going to stop calling in. Anyways, like I said, I'll keep my subscription because I love you guys. You guys do great work. And I'll keep watching the games. But, you know, beyond that, it's not worth it anymore. Fine on, Jason Longhorn Country.
Jason, no.
I mean, that's honest. Like, people are like checking out.
If Jason checks out, that's when you know.
This is not good for you. Like, this is not good for USC.
Obviously.
No, I think the word Jason used, and people ought to understand at USC, we use the word invested. And that's a lot. When you're invested in a program and you start getting the sense that you're invested more in the program than the people running the program are, that's got to stop. You've got to have people running the USC program who people like Jason in Longhorn Country can identify with and say, they want it just as much as I do. And I don't think that comes through at all, that the people running the USC program want it as much as Jason in Longhorn Country wants it. And he's right. That's a great point. It's hard to be invested more than the people in the program are invested.
Yeah.
Even on tunnel vision. I mean, Taylor Mays is getting really upset. And people were like noting, hey, he seems more upset than some of what we've seen from other people. So let's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I think you see many of the old great players around is they can't stand it. They want it more for USC than they think the people at USC want it. And they're not on the sidelines. They're not at practice. You don't, or they come back like Taylor and then they start banging their head against the wall and say, what the hell's going on with these guys? Come on. You know, and you can't disagree.
Yeah. Well,
deep breath.
Sorry, because I was.
No, we both did it at the same time.
We're going to head out to practice. We feel bad. Sorry, Jason. That's all we want to see. You know, yeah. We do appreciate you. Thanks for the, I guess it's the sympathy subscription that you're giving us. But
we appreciate it.
We've definitely had that, though. People that, like, hey, we love you guys. We love the site. Your coverage is awesome. I just can't pay attention to it every day like I have been. And that's been common. And I don't know what do you say? But people have, it's like, there's a sense of apathy, I guess, there from a lot of the fans that just don't want to, like Dan said, they don't want to invest into it anymore because they would spend a lot of time. They would get up every morning and tell me, "Oh, I'll read your message board every morning." And then I read it at lunch and I find out what's going on. I watch all your videos. I read all your stories. And like, it's not getting better for them. And even though they're getting great content, which I mean, like, we appreciate that they like it, they don't like what we're covering, you know, and obviously we don't have control over that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. Jason gave them a standard though. I thought that was a good move. He said, win 4 straight games, including one on the road. Maybe I'll be back. I like that. That was right. That was, you know, the kind of thing, you're not going game to game. I think that's another thing is more of a sweeping. This is the direction we're going, not this up 1 week, down the next and back and forth. Again, you can't do that. You gotta have, this is who we are, you know. If you want to model yourself after Notre Dame in some ways, at least they are who they are. They know who they are. Their fans know what they're going to get. And, you know, their fans could walk away and say, yeah, we're probably not as talented as USC, but we beat them. And we played hard. And we look like we're well coached. And USC fans should be able to expect that same kind of, you know, take is, you know, we're playing hard. We know who we are. We get the most out of our talent and see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. You know, nice hour and a half show. We got the good job, though, Keely, getting through all the questions because there was a lot.
Excellent. Yeah.
There was a lot in there. So thanks, everyone, for sending all the questions. Thanks for listening, of course. That's Keely Yore, Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.